live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to learn about how exercising before breakfast makes an enormous benefit to your health, according to an article I just read in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism done at the University of Bath, which is in Great Britain, and about 10 more articles I'll be sharing with you today. Also today, I'm going to be doing a commentary. I began this last evening in a long discussion when I asked the people in the room, tell me the hardest question that you've never been able to ask and get an answer for in your life that's plagued you. Don't give me a soft question, the toughest one. See if I can in any way provide some, let's say, a different way of looking at the problem. And I got an interesting question, and I spent the time answering that. I did the same for a two-hour lecture before we went out on our walk today. So I'm going to tie in something from The Natural Blaze, a really good article by Kingsley L. Dennis called Pop Spirit, The Commodification of Spirituality and Simulated Desires, with my own insights. Also today, we're going to take a look at how a person can go from running an agency like the CDC, like Judy Gerberding, overseeing the safety and efficacy, and being there when there was the scandal by William Thompson and all the other colleagues of William Thompson's of hiding, covering up, and the information that the MMR vaccine caused autism spectrum disorder, 324% increase in African-American boys, 36 months and younger. And you go, you leave the CDC and you go to head the vaccine division of Merck for millions of dollars. How is that ethical on any level? I'm not saying it's illegal, but it's certainly, in my opinion, unethical. We'll have a short piece on that. And then, more importantly, I want to play a clip I did not have a chance to yesterday because I did a extemporaneous, impromptu 20-minute commentary. Well, today we're going to get to that economic hitman, how our foreign policy is never covered by the left or the right in the media. There's just no legitimate looking at the truth of why we're bringing democracy and freedom to countries, and we bring death and destruction instead. Why can't the New York Times and other places see this? They didn't condemn this, even recognize it in Yemen for 3 years. And then when they did, it was only to weaponize their arguments against Trump. Why didn't they weaponize the arguments of the person who allowed that, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? The politics in this country are so, so corrupt. Anyhow, we're going to deal with that as well. Just before I begin, just a quick mention that today is the day they're supposed to be in court, and I'm assuming they are, arguing about bringing WBAI, our beloved local station, back on community radio for all the people. It's being hijacked in a coup by individuals at the national level, the executive director and the supporting members on the national board, and by a group, a cabal inside KPFA in Berkeley. Hopefully we will win and the station will come back and all the programs be back where they were. At the very least, I believe we'll lose about 50% of our audience, which we absolutely cannot afford. So to help the station and to help the people not lose track of those that they appreciate on the air, of whom there are many, we, meaning Jesse and Alex and Sharon and Neil and Glenn and Jay, myself and Jay, and Travis, all of us who are part of Progressive Radio Network in the corporate office in New York, we are opening up our airwaves as a gesture of kindness and support and solidarity to allow them, the programmers on BAI, to have a forum until such time that they can be reinstated on BAI. It's a fallback position. So at least there's not just dead air. Well, not dead air, but air that is canned and brought in like the Tom Hartmans that we would not air on, Perry and I might mention, for different reasons. I consider it like a corporate Democrat, and that I don't tolerate, nor any other ideology that supports the establishment and the status quo, irrespective of how many token gestures of liberalism you throw into the mix. In any case, give us a call if you'd like to be on the air, and we'll move mountains to try to get you a place. Some people have already called. By the way, they didn't even know I was making the offer. The listeners went to their Facebook page, like David Rothenberg and others. And David, by the way, no one that I know in radio has ever been able to present that kind of unique insight into the way that the theater works, the people engaged in it, and a long history of personal relationships. He's just a wonderful human being and extraordinarily gifted and talented. So he gave us a call, and he's coming in to have a meeting. So anyone else, at least you know that you have a place to be until such time that this crisis is resolved, and hopefully resolved to get BAI back on the air. And I want to thank Mitch Cohen, who also has been asking, and of course, we had already made the offer to Linda Perry, the program director, but she, which is her right, said no, we don't want to be on PRN, which is okay. We're only 1,000 times larger in audience, but hey, everybody's got their ideas of what programming should be, and she certainly has every right to have hers. I just hope she was not speaking for all the other producers, and that's why I'm making this offer. Now to the latest on health and healing. And this is important because a lot of people exercise only in the evening. I do not recommend that. And the reason why is because the body goes through an anabolic building up stage in our metabolism from about 4 in the morning to about 11 in the morning. That 7 hours is normally when you're at your best as far as energy, acuity, a focus, and then you're kind of in a neutral stage to about 4 in the afternoon. And then from about 4 in the afternoon, that's when we kind of want a nap, when we're really getting tired, when we start to slow down a bit. And then after dinner, we really slow down unless we have something that's invigorating us. Have you ever noticed you could be dead tired and then something pops up that interests you and you're wide awake and got all the energy in the world? But for most people, they go through a catabolic breaking down, which is a normal, natural part of our circadian rhythm and our biochemistry, because let's face it, the body has to have time to cleanse out the dead cells, and the dead cells can represent about 1% of your intestinal cells each day, your skin cells shed. If you were to look at a sheet in the morning, even if you take a shower at night, and I'm assuming you do, and if you held the sheet up and you were able to look with a blue light to see all of the dead cells in the bacteria that came off your body and all of the different steroid pigments, it would just be covering your entire sheet. And the more you sweat, the more that happens. That is a normal process, the exfoliation of dead cells to be replaced through the mitosis or new cell development. So there's a reason why we get tired. I'm not talking about from disease or viruses. I'm talking about normal rhythms. You can't go full throttle all the time. You'll burn your adrenals out. You will become exhausted. You'll burn out your mitochondria. So working out is going to be best in the morning. So if you go out and do your workout, whatever it is in the morning, that is best in cycle. Now, if you want to do a lighter workout in the early evening, that's fine. But I would not work out later because you're going to speed up your metabolism artificially and you're not going to be able to go to sleep so easily. Now, according to an article I read in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism and at the University of Bath in Birmingham, they found that by changing the timing when you eat and exercise, you have better control over your blood sugar levels. This is just one more reason to do this. This was a six-week study of people who were either overweight or obese, comparing them to a group that was not. And they found that if you exercise prior to eating, it was always better. So, simple takeaway message. exercise, then eat your breakfast. All right? And you'll be healthier. From Marshall University, their School of Medicine, they found that chili peppers, yes, the chili peppers, you know, like the cayenne peppers, those can offer a natural solution to cancer. That's correct. What makes the chili pepper pungent is a chemical called capsaicin, capsaicin, and it stopped lung cancer metastasis dead in its tracks. So, the search for lung cancer treatment is important as this type of cancer is the leading cause of cancer death among both men and women in the United States. That's according to the American Cancer Society. They estimate 200,000 people will develop lung cancer every year and 150,000 will die from it. And most cancer deaths are caused by the disease metastasizing or spreading to different parts of the body, liver, kidneys, bone, brain. So in this particular experiment, they use capsaicin in three cultural lines of human non-small cell lung cancer, and they found the compound inhibited the first stage of metastasis called invasion. And then the researchers conducted an animal trial in which they fed mice with lung cancer a diet enhanced with capsaicin. And through this, they found that the animals had a much smaller number of metastatic cancer cells in their lungs compared to with mice that did not receive the treatments. In addition to cell experiments, research found that capsaicin inhibited metastasis in lung cancer by blocking the activation of what is called the SRC protein. Now, by the way, that protein is needed in regulating the proliferation and survival mortality of the cells. So there's no real downside to this. You might have with capsaicin, you'll have a little burning sensation. That's true if you're eating hot chili. And with some people, they can have some gastrointestinal irritation, but it's good. And this was published in the American Society of Investigative Pathology. So that's all good. Also, from Oregon State University, publishing Aging and Mechanisms of Disease, daily exposure to blue light can accelerate aging, and it's really bad for your eyes. So what do we mean? Well, according to Oregon State University, prolonged exposure to blue light, that's what you're looking at if you're looking at your laptop, any of those portable devices, your cell phone, or your computer, and even the high-definition televisions. So, in fact, even household fixtures, it's affecting your eyes, your brain. And why? It's because, how can I say this? Okay, the blue wavelengths produced by light-emitting diodes damage cells in the brain as well as in your retinas. And so that's important. So wherever possible, use blue light blockers and limit your screen time. It's really worth it. Your health is worth it, so do it. A lot of people spend an enormous amount of time on their computers, and they shouldn't. Also, we found that from the Scripps Research Institute, a good study, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Blood, that when you're doing gene therapy, if you add a plant-based compound called resveratrol, and you've heard me talk about res, R-E-S, vera, V-E-R-A, trol, T-R-O, resveratrol, three syllables, that you get it from grapes, you can also get it from berries, that it enables faster, more effective treatments. And that's important. For example, gene therapy has broadened the treatment for people with immune system deficiencies and blood-based conditions like sickle cell anemia and leukemia. And these diseases, which once would require a bone marrow transplant, can now be successfully treated by modifying patients' own blood stem cells to correct the underlying genetic problem. But today's standard process for administering gene therapy is expensive and time-consuming and results in a lot of steps required to deliver the healthy genes into the patient's blood stem cells to correct the genetic problem. And now you can help sidestep many of those difficulties and result in more efficient gene delivery methods that would save time and money and improve the outcomes. So if you can repair blood stem cells with a single gene delivery treatment rather than multiple treatments over the course of many days, you can reduce the clinical time and expense. And what do they find does it? Resveratrol. Now we know, and if you've been listening to this program, resveratrol is a powerful antioxidant, has strong anti-inflammatory properties, and it makes a difference. So when they were adding resveratrol into this hematopoietic stem cell, they found a difference. So the takeaway message is if you're engaged in gene therapy, ask your scientist or physician that there is scientific literature proving that resveratrol can help the process. And speaking of vegetables and fruits that help our biochemistry, two studies, one from the University of Navarra and the other University of Jaén, which are in Spain, and this was what they found was you can reduce your risk of breast cancer by 65% with fruits and vegetables. So many people need to improve their diet. They're just not getting enough organic, hopefully locally grown when possible in season, fruits and vegetables. And that's especially true for women who are postmenopausal. This was a 12-year study looking at 11,000 women and dividing them into different groups depending upon the type of fruits and vegetables they were consuming and how much. And they were on an anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, high antioxidant diet, what many of you eat every day. And they came to the determination that if you take in what are called hydroxycinnamic acids, hydroxy, H-Y-D-R-O-X-Y, cinnamic, C-I-N-N-A-M-I-C, it's an acid that, especially from chlorogenic acids, and you find these in your fruits and vegetables. I just wanted to give you a little, because let's say you're a scientist, you're a physician, you say, okay, we say eat fruits and vegetables. Why? What's in them? So if you eat broccoli, I'm going to say you're going to get indole-3 carbonyl, or IC3. You're going to get isothiocyanates. I could name multiple of these, but then you might say, okay, now I understand. Then they can Google that and go to the Library of Medicine and then look up under isothiocyanates and then see hundreds of studies of how this can block cancer from forming and stop it from spreading. Then they go, ah, now I know why I should eat broccoli. Now, if you're an average person, you just say, I don't need to know all the science. I just have to have a reasonable belief that what you're suggesting makes sense. It's a good vegetable if I'm going to eat it organic. And if it has known sulfur compounds, which gives a little bit of its pungency, like a garlic, and that is good for me. So depending upon a curve of your desire for additional information, there's a huge curve you can get into where you can look at thousands upon thousands of studies, over 40,000 studies just on vitamin C. And then you can go by therapeutic dosage, and suddenly you see that the therapeutic dosage is much higher than what we're taking. Well, why aren't we taking more? That's not based upon science. That's based upon individual prejudice and bias or institutional bias, where certain groups don't want us taking a lot of vitamin C if that would compete with drugs they're selling us. But in any case, when you're taking your fruits and vegetables, and I'm suggesting a minimum of 11 servings a day, and if you want to get far more than that, you can take it in powder form or in concentrate form. But anyhow, you have a 65% less likelihood of developing breast cancer. That's pretty good, isn't it? Just that. And a study from Sweden's Karolinska Institute found that there's a lower incidence of breast cancer when you're using green tea. And there was an article in the British Journal of Cancer, studied 269 women, and found something similar. You can lower your risk of breast cancer depending upon what you're putting in your body that impacts the genes positively or negatively. I'm talking about impacting genes. University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences published in the FASEB journal, it's a scientific journal, that soy protein, and I'm hopeful then in this case, though it didn't distinguish, it's non-genetically engineered organic soy, early in life can help prevent bone loss when you're older. Well, by the way, in our anti, as an aside, we just, after the first 2 weeks, we're now in our third week, finishing our third week this today, we were able to increase bone density in every single person by 4 to 7%. That's huge. There's no drug ever known to do that. We studied the literature. When I saw the results, I said, wow. So that's a study we're doing every 2 weeks for the entire 12 weeks. So we're getting tremendous results. I mean, just absolutely staggering. One guy who came in had a big pot belly. Now he has no pot belly, and he's actually got abs. You're seeing the cut muscles. A whole lot of changes. But I'll keep you up on that until it's finished. From Brown University comes a study about cacao. C-O-C-A-O. That's your chocolate, your raw organic chocolate. And it improves cardiovascular biomarkers. That's good. Because I'm not doing it now, I'm going to take a biomarker with 4 weeks to go, and then we're going to give people 4 ounces of chocolate a day, organic chocolate, 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon. And at the end of 4 weeks, we're going to measure them again to see if we can also see C-reactive protein, homocysteine, fibrinogen. These are markers for inflammation that you can't feel or know, but when they're elevated, you get your homocysteine level up around 15, 16, 17, 18. I've had people at 30. That's a heart attack waiting to happen. If we can bring that down, and the only thing has changed, since everything is identical, mind you, our study is so emphatically strict that every person has to take the same supplements, the same food, the same juices, the same exercise, same meditation classes, same yoga every single day. So there's never been a study like this in history. Anyhow, this meta-analysis published in the Journal of Nutrition showed that when you're taking cacao, you're lowering your biomarkers for having a heart attack. So take your organic chocolate. That's it. We're 22 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to go directly to a clip. It's a short clip, 3 minutes long, on it explains how the head of the CDC left to become the head of the vaccine division of Merck. And is that not a gross conflict of interest? And that's true at almost every agency. The defense agency, you go to work in the procurement division of the Pentagon, and suddenly you leave there and you go to work in the division at Lockheed Martin or some manufacturer of arms. There's just so much conflict of interest. All of Washington is a cesspool. It's not a swamp. Don't denigrate the swamp. The swamp, there's nothing wrong with swamps. Swamps are natural biological systems. Alligators could live 100 years in there. You know, there's whole dynamic. People live there. Go down with me to New Orleans and go meet the real inhabitants of the swamp. And no, we're talking about a sewer filled with the human intellectual feces that permeates the entirety of Washington, D.C., as it does every state capital, especially true. My God, there's not a plumber in the world that could unclog the septic system of Albany and Trenton. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
This is the swamp at work. you know, this is this world of incestuous, players in what, you know, Washington talked about the military-industrial complex. This is the medical-industrial complex, and you have, you know, regulators and companies and inventors and technologists, and they all work together, and they're all in this cozy little club. They get together for meetings in Washington, D.C., and they're interested in preserving the profits, the jobs, the, you know, the careers of the people that are in this club. And they, in many respects, might be well-meaning, but if you think we have independent governance, I think parents are asking for honest safety analysis, attention to the real health of children and not the financial health of corporations. And the head of the CDC is the person, both, formally and symbolically, that is in charge of the health of children. And they're in charge of the schedule. They're in charge of opening the gate to new vaccines and either granting or denying billion-dollar franchises to the companies. And when someone who is heading up that agency and watches over, you know, these autism controversies or, you know, the introduction of new vaccines like the Gardasil vaccine, when the person that's in charge of that, you know, that whole, is the steward of these policies and of the health of children, in the leaves government and in the minimum possible time allowed by government ethics laws, moves into a job running the income statement, is responsible for the value, the profitability, the growth of Merck's vaccine business. Is there anything more corrupt than that? Is there anything that diminishes the credibility and legitimacy of the CDC as an agency if it's just a revolving door to a vaccine manufacturer? I can't imagine a greater cartoon and better evidence of corruption that you can't trust the CDC. And so Gerberding is the poster child for the swamp of the vaccine industrial complex in Washington, D.C. And it's wrong. It's obviously wrong.
Okay, that's just one clip. We're going to have another clip a little later on to play. I'm very concerned about conflict of interest, but they're just not stopping, and they won't stop until we decide we've had enough. One of the topics that I've been discussing at length is, what is the central meaning or the core value of our existence? Why are we alive? I believe that what we put our energy into, more often than not, is finding happiness, as if somehow happiness is an object that we must possess or a goal that we must work for and or towards, or someone in our lives to comfort us, to help us, to be the secure part of our insecure psyche. Now, good relationships are wonderful, and I've benefited from good relationships. I hope people have benefited from my relationship. Friendships last if they're good. And because a friend, you can be yourself. You can always be open. You can be vulnerable. You can tell them the truth of what you feel. You don't fear at all that they're ever going to take the advantage of that and use it against you. And so we love being around our friends. They're like a very comfortable shoe or loose, nice pair of clothes we can put on, and it feels good, it looks good, and we don't have to change that. But then we come to the people who are in crisis. And when a person's in crisis, they're extremely vulnerable for manipulation. And whoever is the charismatic person of the moment, whoever has something that they're marketing or selling that seems to be the cure for what ails us in our drama of life, in our dharma, and our karma of life, we give them undue attention and frequently undeserved support. So when I read an article from The Natural Blaze, I want to share the important points with you because, and it's from Kingsley Dennis, and I appreciate, Kingsley, the good work you did on this, because virtually all of the 23 hours of lectures I've done, a whole lot of lectures, but all of them meaningful, and we have a lot of heady people here. We must have 7 professors. I don't know who people are before they come. I don't interview anyone when they come to a health retreat, let alone an anti-aging. That's all done by Luann. She's the one who selects people to make sure that they're not going to waste their time. And we tell people, if you're angry and if you're highly judgmental, this is not the place for you. We like people to feel that they're not being watched and judged, that they can just heal whatever is aching in their heart, their mind, their body. And then we have to take a look around at the movement that exploits people like this. When people know that you're not in a good mood, you may have a maladjusted attitude. And where's this come from? These are non-physical manifestations of how our character and emotions were formed early in life based upon when we did not have an intellect or the capacity or the circumstances to leave a bad situation. Our traumas start early, and because we cannot think through them, we feel completely about them. We absorb them and we become them. But we're helpless. Children, infants, toddlers, even teenagers. By the time a teenager starts to realize they have their own identity. And if they've had good parents, they've been allowed to have some boundaries, yes, and understand consequences, yes. And most importantly, as a parent, you must allow your children to fail, not your young children. But once a child starts acting out, there's a point where you have to allow them to fail in order for them to realize they took a chance, they did something inappropriate, they didn't think through it, they weren't reasonable, they were emotional, they were headstrong, and wow, they hit the ground and they broke their nose. Well, the nose will heal. And hopefully they'll learn a lesson from that. That in life, we do have boundaries. There are sanctuaries that we are not allowed to enter unless we're invited, including taking what is dysfunctional in ourselves and assuming that anyone in our life should absorb our dysfunction and hence our energy. And that's where I come up with the concept of energy exchange. Virtually all the work I do is energy exchange. The other day when you heard me really go after the corrupt cops, But first, if you notice, I prefaced, I said, what we need today is we need an entirely new way of bringing people into law enforcement. They should come in because they want to serve making neighborhoods function in a harmonious way again. That means they have to have far more psychological and sociological counseling. Part of their training should be going into neighborhoods, going door to door. Learning who people are, what are their issues, what are their problems, not to judge them, but to understand from them. And then go to work for at least the first 3 years in the very neighborhoods that you come from and make sure that there is not a neighborhood with a crime rate that does not have a person there without the body armor, without all the weapons, but there to help people. If you did that, and if you had a way of listening to people's problems, then reaching out to different services that would go in, and you as the police officer would find out, well, you know, this block has got all these older people, and they're afraid to go to the store. They're afraid to go to the bank. They go to the bank, and on the way home, someone hits them up, some person hits them up for that money. Is that everyone? No, it's not everyone. But almost every neighborhood where people are vulnerable, you're going to have people take advantage of that. So if you had an officer there who would go to the bank for people with them, and you had an officer who would walk back from them, and if you had a junior officers, volunteer officers, who would go and do shopping for people, think of the service that would be to help people, and then they didn't fear the neighborhood of which they had grown up and at one time was safe and harmonious, where there is homogeneity. And now it's a battleground, and the most vulnerable are always going to be the victims. That's the way it works. So you have to understand the role of what police should be is not to come with 16 guys standing around and looking at the marker of where a body was on the street. Did you ever notice? What good does that do? You know, you got 16 cops where there was a murder and none there before. Because we're not looking at the progenitor. What is the basis of crime? What is the basis of social unrest? What is the basis of public outrage? What is the basis? What is the consequence of having broken families without a father and mother and aunts and uncles without an extended family? Can you have a community be an extended family if one is missing? Yes, you can. And it's done all over the world. My God, look at elephants. When an elephant is born after 24 months of gestation, every single elephant will come around and take its trunk and stick its trunk into the baby's mouth and wrap its trunk around its trunk. So it's identifying. So the baby from the very first steps of life began to realize it doesn't just have one mother, it has multiple mothers that will absolutely be with it for the rest of its life. And that's a bond that never breaks. You never see these people fighting each other. And the same, by the way, is true in I just posted a piece of an orphaned chimpanzee. The mother rejected it, and so it would normally die. But instead, it was put into a group of females, and one of the females took it on as her own, and all of the females groomed it. And as a result of that grooming and nurturing, it begins to play with all the other females, and they play with it. And now it has a chance to thrive and survive. Why can't we do the same? Now, why can't we look at those in the neighborhood, go door to door, knock on doors, sit down with people? Are you eating dog food, cat food? Yeah. Why? I can't afford tuna, regular human tuna. Well, we're going to end that today. And you get everyone else in the neighborhood said, that's our neighbor. She's a part of us. Come on, we can all chip in, right? Yes. If you've got to have a different mindset, you have to change your perception of the sacredness of life. When we stop valuing life, we become the perfect tools for the corporate interest to weaponize our fear against us. So that's what I want to see the police become. I don't want to have police who are bound up in hormones wearing ultra-tight ideas, living in an ultra-alpha-masculine mindset that somehow every shot must be a kill shot and everyone represents a trigger to their insecurity and they felt threatened. So 12 guys in SWAT outfits and 12 guys completely armored and 12 guys with stun grenades and 12 guys with automatic rifles can kick in a door in the middle of the night and shoot an innocent woman in her own house, kill the dog, and shoot the baby or throw a stun grenade into the room and blow up the brains and the baby, and nothing is considered unusual or bad about it. No one's held accountable because of the corruption of a system that protects its own. Doctors are no better. Nurses are no better. They're all corrupt when it comes to protecting their own. If every doctor that made a mistake in an operating room was held accountable, then you wouldn't have any doctors left in the operating room. If every nurse that gave the wrong prescription and there were consequences, you wouldn't have any nurses left in America. That's the reality. If every politician who took a bribe in the form of campaign donations from a sponsor, a lobbyist, if they were called out, you wouldn't have a single politician left in Washington or in any state capital. So when I say that our entire system of paradigma, coming from the Greek paradigm, meaning pattern of behavior, our entire paradigm has been adversely affected by who controls us. And then you have people that I do not respect and do not like Oprah Winfrey, and I've been telling you this for a long time, pull back and see what she actually does to help people. And I don't see how she helps people, but she has to make herself the goddess, you know, the goddess who comes in and sprinkles the wonderful etheric pixie dust on people by giving them prizes or making them feel that I've got the secret and all these authors, all of which have been commodified and commercialized, including Dr. Oz and Harpo Media. It's not done for free. She doesn't live in a ghetto. She doesn't take her money into the ghetto. Everything she does and everything all these other celebrities do is for show. If every rapper that became successful and's got plenty of money for bling, even though many of, not all, but many of their lyrics are racist, misogynist, vile, calling women whores, and where'd you learn to do that, buddy? Are you proud of yourself? No one's criticizing you. Everyone's praising you. Everybody wants to come up and shake your hand and have you dinner. And that's what we reward people for? How far down the guttural rabbit hole of ethics and common sense, decent morality do we have to go? But we look at the success and what you can buy and how you influence, not where you made it and how it really affects people. So the issue is then, don't we need a new way of looking at enlightenment? And yet in our modern cultures, all we get is a bite-sized YouTube, according to Kinsley Dennis. Yeah, I would agree. And what does that provide? It provides compatible fleeting moments. Hence, the prevailing mood of our times is one where the spirit, and how many times have I heard people say spirit and heart, and what do they really mean? Well, it's like a radio-friendly 3-minute pop song. It's a digestible burst that we can chew on without it giving us indigestion, and we have literally thousands of online videos showing us how to improve almost every aspect of our lives by breathing and body postures, mental exercises and visualizations and good old self-in-the-mirror pep talks, right? All we need is Tony Robbins to be present, Francis the Talking Mule, one mouth up one ear and going to the other ear and clapping and dancing. Yes, Tony. Yes, Tony. How much money do you want this weekend? 3,000, 4,000? Is this our 20th time with Tony? My God, can't we see the commodification of that movement? Even Wayne Dyer. Yeah. It doesn't mean everything that someone says is inaccurate, but without a context, it's like pouring water in the sand and wondering why the lettuce didn't grow. We are told that we create our own reality. Really? We create our own reality? That is one of the most absurd notions I've ever heard, and it's vile and false. Just like I said this morning, when someone says, well, we'll pray for us. Don't pray for someone. Do something for someone. Did your prayer stop Hitler from killing 6+ million Jews and the gypsies and the communists? No. Did the prayer stop all the blight in Yemen? No. Did it save 20 million people from starvation? No. Did it help the 20 million who died in the Congo from a civil war and exploitation by mineralists? No. Did it stop Mao Zedong and the idiots liberals who believed in him and his little red book? No. Did it stop Stalin? No. Well, then do something. Don't walk by someone and say, I'll pray for you, friend. No, you stop and you say, friend, can I help you? And they'll say yes or no. And if they say yes, say, before I help you, would you please tell me your story? How did you get here? And let them tell you how they got there. And say, well, I just want you to know that at least today, this is enough money, $10, $15 to $20, whatever it is, whatever you can afford. And so today, you got money for food. And I care about you as a human being, because I recognize that you also are a sacred human being. Don't judge someone by where they're at on the social ladder, because right now the person we should respect most would be Kim Kardashian, and the person we should respect least would be the indigenous tribe member. Yet who is closer to their spiritual authenticity? That's how far we've come by understanding we create our own reality. Do we? Do we? Did the people in Syria create the reality from ISIS, or did we create ISIS because we wanted to work with Turkey and Saudi Arabia to get their oil? Think of it. Yeah. Yeah. So did you create your reality by allowing a television that you didn't know there was a hole in the screen with all new flat-screen TVs that's watching you and hearing you? Did you know that everything you say to that little talking box that answers your questions, what's the weather and who won the ball game, it's also listening with thousands of Amazon with that little bald jerk who's the richest man in the world? What a fool. What does that tell us with one of the most deplorable human beings in the history of the world, Jeff Bezos, has more power and more respect because he is the wealthiest? By that means, then, we should respect the heads of narco-terrorist drug cartels Pablo Escobar should be immortalized with his own face up at Mount Rushmore. What have we done with our values? So despite the obvious fact that we are surrounded in a society where corporate managers, celebrities, not all but many, and almost all politicians, we accept as being sociopaths in power, or perhaps we voted them in office without looking to do any homework. If that is our reality, then what does it say about ourselves? That most of us are latent sociopaths with a hidden agenda for inflicting suffering upon others? Because how could we allow someone else by proxy to create seven wars, Barack Obama, around the world, killing over 1 million people, Barack Obama having a death list every Tuesday that he met with someone to kill list, and suddenly that's considered kind of quaint and cool? Wouldn't it be neat if I had a kill list, and every Tuesday I could meet with someone who would then execute that kill list by sending commandos or the jackals out to kill someone? And no one questions it. No one at the New York Times, because maybe working for the New York Times caused your IQ to decrease by 50%, because your ethics have decreased by 100%, your objectivity by 1,000%. So if this is creating your own reality, Tony Robbins, and some of the others, then most of us must also be secretly longing for therapy. It seems that the sublime has become lost or distorted within the grotesque spectacle of the spirit. That is, aspects of our soul nature, have become commodified and watered down so that they're shards of, or even filaments, of their real glory. And that once considered sacred by splashing across social media and shared as if spreading them brings us amplified gratification. Perhaps of some truths are gobbled rapidly during a weekend when we become an instant 12th degree Grandmaster Reiki. And you're going to become a Grandmaster Reiki in what, 3 days? And yet you're walking around with arthritis? I don't think so. But boy, do we take shortcuts to everything. We take shortcuts to truth. We take shortcuts to overcome our pain. They're called opiates. We take shortcuts dealing with our problem. They're called antipsychotic and antidepressant medications. We take shortcuts when we're trying to vote for someone into office with always the wrong person. Every Democrat, every Republican are the wrong people. The very people to demand our trust and demand our vote are the least qualified to give it. When was the last time someone who truly had morals wanted our vote? Can you name me a person? Then name it. And don't mention Martin Luther King. He didn't ask for our vote, nor did Gandhi ask for our vote. Were they flawed? You bet they were flawed. But were they right about what they believed in and shared with us? You bet they were right with what they believed in. And weighing on the scale of moral and social justice, they weigh strongly on the positive, but are still weak on the negative. Just imagine we've become fixated on the quick fix, the morning shot of feel-good wisdom, watching those mindless, robotic television talking heads with surgically enhanced faces, artificial colored hair, bobbing up and down like the little caricatured dog in the back of a car that is meaningless but moving. They talk with nothing of relevance coming out, because dare they say anything truly truthful, it would not make us feel as good as we want. So feel-good wisdom is packaged now with pleasing images, be it nirvana, a samadhi, or some surrealistic bliss. Colorful figures in lotus positions with flowers blossoming from their chakras adorn our vertical walls and our desktops. And so we have their presence programmed into our screen images. Transcendence comes through the third eye as it sits in the center of the forehead, awaiting patiently its activation through social media triggers. You need social media. You need an app. You need someone selling you something before your third eye is awakened. Wow. And if the colorful chakras in the lotus position don't get it, well, then you're one of your countless videos of cute cats to make you go all fluffy and tingly inside will. And while serious video online only receive moderate viewing figures, the ones of cat compilations or a cute cat trying to do yoga will get you in excess of 10 million hits. Talk on a deeper subject, you get 2 hits. Popular cultures the world over have become saccharine playgrounds where fads and aspartame-coated famous wannabes parade and trot like peacocks. We are in danger of becoming submerged in the sickly success of such pop cultures. And right now, our entire new age feel-good, it's your fault mentality is rampant, where the spirit is exposed to a shortcut trip to enlightenment. I remember raising my daughter. She first was concerned we didn't have a television because all of her friends had television, and we didn't have a radio because all of her friends had radio. And when we had a computer, her friends had computers, we didn't. And she was angry, and she showed me her anger, and I said, that's fine. I says, now, what do you have that all your friends and their fathers and mothers don't have? She says, I don't know. We live in this tiny little place, this one-room apartment. I said, yes, we live very humbly. And they have big apartments around the corner. We were on 89th between Riverside and West End Avenue. And I said, around the corner, in fact, on the corner, one of your friends has a 7-room apartment overlooking Riverside. Beautiful apartment. But you, every day, have benefited from a classic. I read you a classic every day and then ask you, what do you understand? Then try to break it into language that you can appreciate and understand and see how it can impact how you think. At that point, she had been read over 1,000 classics. She would later be read probably 3,000 classics. Now go ask your friends what they know of the true meaning of any of those classics, and they'll have a blank stare. And beyond the blank stare, you'll see a television in the background, and that television is not enlightening him. So you have what they don't, so appreciate what you do have and don't resent what you don't. They're going to resent what they don't have. They're going to end up with a lot of I don't knows. So don't look at a person's wealth or where you're living or what you don't have, because you have strengths that you're not even appreciative of yet. So you see, we're a nation in desperate search of some essential grounding of who we are, but instead we're pixelated by everyone else getting into our mind and telling us what we should believe and what will give us happiness, what will give us comfort, what will give us truth, what will give us protection, what will soothe our anxieties. But it's all meant to commodify us, to take away our capacity even for self-reflection. Everything is externalized except our emotions. Of course, there's ample room for those parodies that make light fun of such pseudo-spiritual pretensions. And there are many of these humorous parodies out there in the world. Thankfully, they can make us laugh at the things we take seriously. Now, you may think that staring into a mirror and growling to yourself saying, I'm a lion. No, you're not. A lion would never need to look in a mirror to see its strength. Do you think an eagle, and I'm looking out the window right now, from down here in the hills of Texas, and I'm seeing 2 eagles perched on a branch. Do you think that either of those eagles have to have a discussion? Now, what if I start to fly off here and I don't have the confidence to flap my wings? What if the wind takes me in a different direction? What if I didn't eat enough? What if I'm too weak? No. The lion, the bird, never questions his capacity to live in perfect harmony with its surroundings. We're uniquely patenting that. So understand something is kind of a weird in a surrealistic, onagestic sort of way, but we've been told to do it, or something similar, to question our strengths. We have self-doubt. We're afraid of competing in the wrong way, lest we've been shown to be inferior. We hide our truths, or we hide our concerns. We only promote our strengths, or at least what we pretend are our strengths, and everything that could liberate us, free us, so we don't have to go rushing off to do our afternoon yoga or sit down for $1,000 on a weekend with someone and who's famous to do a mantra, or to try to have someone rub our first or third chakra in opposite directions to get our energy flowing. This is all nonsense. We simply need to have confidence that we're enough to be enough in our own lives. We've also been urged to call out to the universe in order what we want to arrive in our lives, naming it as a, what do they call it now, cosmic ordering, just like Amazon might deliver to you. It's all part of the new quantum reality, but there's nothing quantum in this reality. It's the most base, reductionist, linear, mini-stepping, and tripping through the emotional minefield of our empty being. We hate an emptiness, so we fill it with activities. We fill it with old responsibilities. We fill it with distractions. We fill it with other people's beliefs till we have absolutely no sense who we are uniquely or individually. And so we're told that so-called experts in the quantum field, like life coaching or online courses, they'll give us the answers. Even the whole concept of quantum dilemma, the understanding that our reality is energy-based and repressive to observation or the observed effect, should have torn down our walls of reality construction. And yet, instead, what we got were newy, agey, fluffy ball-like quantum ordering and how to ask the cosmos for our own riches and fantasize lifestyles. How childish. It's all gibberish. We know there is something strange going on over there in the dark energy, the dark matter, but we don't truly wish to look for it, as it's easier to stay in the mainstream light, and that's how it works. So in conclusion, inside our own house is often where we choose not to look. It's too painful to sit in quiet meditation, reflection, and to ask ourselves, let's deconstruct the most remarkable moments in our lives, the best and the worst, and see how did we get there, who was a part of it, how did we manage to accept or reject, who was influential, and is there a pattern of behavior to where I ended up accepting what I should have rejected, rejecting what I should have accepted, growing where I stayed stultified, so I don't have to be one of those people who has to watch Oprah or any one of the thousands of videos on the internet in order to come to some completeness of self, because none of that's going to be complete for anybody. All it does is complete another $1 million in someone's bank account and less than yours. And unfortunately, what is less well known is the concept that spiritual practices that were once legitimate can lose their functionality if they are taken out of their original context of time and space and place. Even worse, when some precise tools are used in a haphazard way, such as combining different elements into a new and modern groovy pop spiritual semblance. When symbols of higher learning become atrophied, meaning they are no longer adopted to the culture, the time, the people, they often incite Pavlovian dog response on the part of the practitioners. Pop spirit emblems, symbols, and trinkets are easily transferred into fetish tokens, such as the religious Rastafari came to be symbolized by the trendy poster Bob Marley smoking a fat reefer that was sticky taped onto tens of thousands of student bedside walls. The two things are just not the same. The emotional totems do not constitute the real thing. Popular spirituality, today's pop spirit, has become its own marketplace in the modern world. There's an old saying comes to mind. The bird which knows not of the sweet water has its beak in salt water all the year. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.